Good evening and welcome to the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and DAB Plus Radio. We are pleased to be supported by the Rainbow Fund, Brighton Rainbow Fund, and we are sponsored by Jack Russell Technologies, who we had Flash on the show last week. I'm joined in the studio this evening by Josh. Hello, Josh.
Hi, David. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. A bit nervous. This is my first time on the decks this year.
Yes, you're back on the decks and I'm doing it, and I'm just sitting here with my fingers just wanting to come over, but I'm trying to be the perfect training operative.
I'm Captain Kirk on the bridge.
Yes, you're doing very well.
Yeah.
So please forgive us as we just carry on with the show. But yes.
Yeah, and we have a lovely guest that is going to tell us all about what they're up to shortly. So how have you been, Josh?
Not too bad. It's nice to have a bit of decent weather for a change.
Isn't it lovely to see the sunshine yesterday?
You'd forget sometimes. Mm. I live in P7, but I walked, there's some roadworks going on or something, so I just walked to Rottingdean and you just think, oh God, so beautiful. And this, we're so lucky to be by the sea.
Yeah.
And we just forget. Yeah. Well,
we forget. We are so blessed to be in this beautiful city with lots going on. I mean, we were discussing before the show, we recorded about what the amount of activism and things that are going on for people living with HIV and within the LGBT plus QI and other communities as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great place. It's very unique, I think, Brighton, isn't it?
It definitely is.
Yeah, especially. We haven't got anybody else on. They're all busy.
No, but we do have an interview with Tony and Gary Pargeter from Lunch Positive, don't we?
Yeah, it's the second episode of the series they did, wasn't it, for Lunch Positive?
Yes.
So we'll have that later on.
And we have three wonderful songs.
Yes. We've got some stories, some local news and some stories, but we've got, after this next song, we've got a great guy, Darren Kerr, who's coming in to talk about his sequel book.
A sequel?
Yeah, fantastic. Brighton's Tonians Under Siege, which is his second book in this vein of...
Yeah.
It's fiction, isn't it? Yes.
Oh,
Darren's just nodding. Fingers up by Darren. Yeah, so shall we get on with the show?
Yeah, let's have a song. So this is going to be... Chance of Desire, and this is by Radiorama.
Let's introduce Darren Kerr. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well.
Very 80s, that, wasn't it?
Very, very 80s. Very, very appropriate for what we're going to talk about.
Yes, and what are we going to talk about?
We are going to talk about my new novel, which is the sequel to The Brightonians.
Yes.
Which was a queer tale set in... our wonderful city by the sea, and this is the sequel. So once again, we are meeting our warring socialites as they grapple with the maze of lockdown restrictions.
Yeah, that's an amazing storyline. That I think it's to get that comparing between COVID and the HIV AIDS epidemic.
Well, yes, I mean that is. I mean, the story is largely set in 2020, and it's really about a bunch of bitchy socialites, grappling with everything that we grapple to. I mean, and I think it was interesting that Josh, you mentioned how beautiful it was walking from Peacehaven down today in the sunshine. And actually, one of the things that people we would often say to each other is there are worse places to be locked down than Brighton. And I think certainly in that sort of those first few weeks of lockdown, the real novelty of it was completely bonkers. And I think, we the kind of things that we were doing, we all sort of go back to talk about some of the crazy extremes that we went to. I always knew that the second installment of The Brightonians would pick up where the last one left off. Obviously, I couldn't have predicted when I started it that we would end up going through what we went through, but I thought, going back to what you're just saying, it was a great way to talk about a perhaps less talked about part of queer history, which was obviously the first pandemic.
With HIV.
So how did you? So the storyline came up and. How important is it to get that out, that message, through a book that's fiction? And
I think it's really important to use fiction in that way. I mean, I think sometimes for the first thing, history just generally is not always massively interesting to people, and so I think you need to find different ways of actually bringing it alive. I mean, we mentioned earlier that I was still am a curator at the Brighton Museum on the queer the Pier. exhibition. Oh, okay. And we tried really hard to make sure that it wasn't just lots of cabinets full of artifacts. We made it very interactive. We were quite conscious that there are ways to actually engage with people, to make sure that our queer history is known to more people. And fiction is just a brilliant way of doing that, because it just draws people in a, I think it's quite sort of, it's quite a clever way of drawing people in. And this particular book, I'm really pleased that I've sort of not really, I wouldn't say I've worked with Alf Lefloic on this. He's a local queer historian, but there are a couple of queer histories in this book that I don't think have really talked about at all. And so anyone reading this book will be interested in my fictionalized version of places like the Magic Farm, which was this gay disco in a barn in the late 70s and early 80s that Alf's just published a book about, which is the actual factual side.
Yeah.
And I've basically, my characters, they're fictional characters, and they go to this farm, and it's this outrageous, exciting, decadent place.
Wow. Clutching our pearls, aren't we, David?
Yeah. Well, it's great to sort of view history through another person's eyes, whether that be a fictional character or a real life person, because you see history from different points of view, don't you?
I think with a book on fiction, you can get much more emotional. You can people can fall in love and people can fall out of love, and I think you can create it's no surprise that a couple of characters in my book, well, more than a couple, are very attractive. And you read it and you get sort of quite sexually attracted to these people. And in fact, one of the characters from the 80s, who's called Odie, is named after Odin. He's actually Danish. Mm-hmm. And he is not too dissimilar from a character you will have seen in lots of Tom of Finland.
Oh, okay.
And you will see quite quickly how he's described as, as such.
Yes. So I'm really interested in the comparisons between the coronavirus and the AIDS epidemic, and how people... Did you get research about what people thought about the two?
I did an awful lot of research for this in lots of different ways. I talked to a lot of... I mean, we talked earlier about queer elders. I talked to quite a few people who are in their 70s now, and actually lived through both. Mm. I mean, I'm 57, so I also lived through both, but the people I'm thinking about are in their 70s now.
Right.
And so they really experienced before the pandemic and afterwards. Mm. And the parallels that I draw, I mean, basically my book starts in January 2020 with a ominous card reading about a city under siege. And of course the fortune teller immediately thinks, is it about this strange coronavirus that I keep, that I've heard stories of on the news? And the book begins, basically covers those first 6 months of 2020, the sort of 3 months before we went into lockdown and sort of 3 months afterwards. And the parallel really is how the book, the flashbacks to the early 80s start in those, it does those sort of 6 years from sort of 1980 up to very early 1987, which are very much the 3 years sort of in the lead up to, I suppose, Rock Hudson.
Yeah.
And then a couple of years afterwards. And the parallels are quite clear in the way that there is this sense of denial, there's this sense of misinformation. Mm. And of course, I mean, really exaggerated with HIV and AIDS, because we didn't have social media, we didn't have the internet.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
And so, for some of my age, I caught the tail end of a couple of documentaries on television. Virus in the Village? I can't remember the actual... There was a Horizon program. Yeah. And so you really are scrabbling around for bits of information. And I think, the same with COVID at the beginning. Obviously, COVID is what it became after a while, didn't it? After starting off as Corona. And there was lots of similarities there. And I think there are lots of similarities in the way that people used humour to actually deal with what was going on.
Yeah.
And that, I think it brings out the best in people and it brings out the worst in people.
Yeah.
But where I think clearly there was huge differences was how people who were most affected were perceived. And you know, one of the little clips, not the clips, one of the little passages I'm going to read out is a sort of touches on that, the way the press really, you know, hounded us and you know, really, you know, was the beginnings of the huge homophobic backlash which led to course 28.
Whips up that hysteria. Yeah. And the pressure cooker of being under siege, as your book title says.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think
crucible of pressure and information and rumour and gossip and
Yes, I'm quite conscious, David. We've said that this is your first big foray into this. This is actually my first interview about the Brightonians. It's actually not officially out until Saturday. Mm-hmm. So apologies if I'm sort of rambling a little
not
bit.
Not at all. No,
absolutely not.
You mentioned you had a passage to read.
Yes. So I've got two mm-hmm. passages. And I've chosen them specifically because one of them is from 2020, and the other one is from the mid 80s.
Right.
So I'll read the first one. So this is Mother's Day, 22nd of March, 2020. So almost 4 years ago to this weekend. Following the announcement that the coronavirus was now a pandemic, like the rest of the country, Brighton was preparing to hunker down. Last suppers had been eaten, last orders called, and the day before national lockdown being Mothering Sunday, one suspected that quite a lot of people in the city would be spending the last few hours of freedom with their extended families. One exception to this was Izzy Pitt, who, at around the time when most mothers would have been relaxing on the sofa surrounded by flowers and chocolates, was setting off to visit a 73-year-old ex-porn star turned drag queen who'd once tripped the light fantastic on the dance floor of a pop-up gay nightclub at a fruit farm in Kent. Yes, thought Izzy to herself, these were indeed strange times. An observation further supported by her reaction to the sound of someone sneezing in the street behind her. Panicked by the noise, Izzy hurriedly unlocked her car and got inside. Once there, she looked furtively in the rearview mirror to see who the perpetrator of this potential weapon of mass destruction could have been. Noting it was Mrs. Pike from number 173, she tuttered loudly and fastened her seatbelt. Ordinarily not a cause for concern in the leafy suburb which hugged the city's main cemetery, but as worries about the pandemic grew, every sneeze, cough and sniffle was now greeted with the same response as gunfire in a war zone might have been. Cover your mouth, darling, at least, chastised Izzy from behind the virus-proof windows of her SUV. One more check in the mirror for unidentified explosive devices or old ladies with bad coughs, and she was on her way.
Oh. We were tittering now, weren't we?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you were tittering, because it is ultimately, it is a dark comedy. Mm. And I think, as I said before, what it really is about is that, you know, just to echo what you said, David, it is about people who feel they're under attack. Human beings feel under attack. They do draw on humour. There is a blitz spirit.
Yes.
And they do draw, and there is incredible kindness that comes out of people who, you know, feel threatened. If I just read you another clip, which is in a similar period, but I've chosen short ones. Mm. So this is lockdown. So this is Wednesday, the 15th of April. So we're now three and a half weeks into the lockdown. Lockdown to-do list, week 3. Learn how to make banana bread, tick. Get bike from shed, tick. Clear out broom cupboard, tick. Tidy attic, tick. Learn how to use sewing machine, tick. Put photos in albums, tick. Do a reading with Sarsenic sigil cards. Pondered Izzy, as her pen hovered over the last item on that week's to-do list. Jobs she thought she'd never get round to tackling, crafts she assumed she'd never have time to master, the latest batch of tasks which, thanks to the lockdown, had now been successfully ticked off. Truth be told, the house had never been more spick and span, the oven rarely cold, and thanks to her newly acquired sewing skills, the dining room table now boasted a neatly hemmed cover. Fortunate, really, since breakfast, lunch and supper had become key highlights of the day, no longer rushed, picked at or simply ignored, but focal points at which she, Ken and Josh would gather to discuss the zeitgeist. Over sourdough pancakes, they trawled through the grim statistics of deaths and hospitalizations caused by the virus. While munching on sourdough sandwiches, they shared human interest stories and conspiracy theories they'd found on the web. and after gorging on sourdough pizzas, they retired to the lounge to binge watch whichever box set they'd chosen that evening. In fact, with so many of their meals containing this miraculous ingredient, it was hard to imagine just how they'd managed to survive without it for so long.
It's just interesting when you listen back and what, how we were all going through that and what we were doing.
Yeah, I mean, started I identified with so many of those to-do list items.
I was going cross.
Yeah, I've since spent the last 2 years taking down all the DIY jobs that I did during lockdown, because now I've actually got the actual materials to do it. Yeah. Rather than just stuff that you just found in the street or in the attic.
I bet loads of people do that. Bought loads of stuff. Because, oh, well, I'll do that. And none of it got done.
There's lots of cupboards full of... lots of Amazon boxes arriving.
Yeah. Oh, and my sewing machine is back in its box.
I remember you saying you got one, yeah. So your book's on this fortune teller. So have you ever had your fortune told, or...?
I have, but only... at Gay Pride, Brighton, about 15 years ago, and I really don't think I was in a fit state to even sort of take on board what was being told. It was very much a sort of, you're going to meet a handsome man, and that was, you know, that was it. Mm. And I don't remember whether I did or not. Have you?
I have, yes.
How did that go?
Oh, it's funny. So it was a while ago. I was a student years ago in 1990-odd, and a couple of friends had gone to this one in Brighton and really recommended this woman. So I went, and I went on a Saturday, and it was her day off. So I got the part-time person.
And you didn't get to get her, you got someone else.
I got
else,
somebody who was part-time, okay. And I sat there and I went in, and I basically told her everything that she told me, really. I just, you have to really be careful not to say anything, don't you? Because otherwise you're giving people a bit of... Mm-hmm. So I told her I'm from Lancashire and I like writing poetry, and she basically said that I was going to marry a homely girl and write a book about Lancashire.
I wonder where how she came to that. My favourite one ever was my friend Caroline from Spain who had a fortune told, and the fortune teller said, "Have you ever ridden horses?" And Caroline said, "No, never." And she said, "Oh, you should have done. You'd have been a champion." What a brilliant get out!
That is a good.
You would have. Been
I got
a
half
champion.
Price. I got it half price.
Oh, that's really good. That's good.
What about you, David? Have you had a fortune told?
I have. I can't remember. It's so long ago. I must have been about 1920. So. Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing my chart, and just lots of lines. I didn't really understand it.
Yeah, it's amazing, really. Mm. Actually,
I did consider it lots of times, but of course, most of this novel was written in lockdown, and it was just there was nothing there. And I think the moment passed. Yeah. The novel was almost finished, and I was like, well, I've invented an entirely new set of fortune telling cards. So I didn't really sort of need to. But of course, I did look into an awful lot of it. And there were some fabulous ones connected to Brighton. Mm. I really would advise people to go and Google Pathé News Clairvoyant Fisherwoman or something like that.
Right.
There's a woman called Madame Binney who, in the 1950s, a palmist, used to tell people's fortunes on the palace pier whilst fishing for cod and bream and stuff.
Really?
And a little bell would go whenever she got a bite, and she would skip back into
stop the reading and carry on.
Go to Pathé News and Google palmist Madame Binney.
Yeah.
Wow. Right. It's amazing.
But Brighton's like that, isn't it? It's got that kind of feel to it.
Which is why I wanted a fortune teller in the book from the beginning, because I felt it was something that was so quintessentially Brighton. In a town which is quintessentially
and on the
not
seaside,
So
your book is all royalties are going to Sussex Beacon.
All the royalties are going to Sussex Beacon. And it's not even a random connection, because actually the Sussex Beacon is mentioned on numerous occasions in the novel, and it begins with the Sussex AIDS helpline in the 80s, and then that's because the book is set in the early 80s. That was the organisation that was really caring for people and providing information and help and advice.
I was a volunteer.
Were you really?
Sussex AIDS Centre and Helpline, yes.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, well, yes, I really wish I'd... it'd be interesting for you to read this, because the references are quite light, because there isn't that much actual historical information available around it. So it would be interesting to, you know, to get your view.
Unfortunately, during lockdown, I threw away a lot of papers that were went back to the Sussex Aid Centre at times. But I've still got some photographs and the old document. But yeah.
So shall I read the other passage?
Absolutely.
Which was is more, because I said I was trying to draw a parallel between the COVID pandemic and the previous one.
Yes.
And I think while there were lots of comparisons, there is lots of differences. And I think this passage really brings that out. So this is called Seaside Rendezvous. And what you need to know is there is one character called Grace, and she has a hotel in the New Steen. And she's a sort of Harvey Milk character in the first and second novels. And she basically, during the beginning of the AIDS pandemic in Brighton, she opens up a hotel for people who've got nowhere else to go, because obviously there was a lot of people losing their jobs and et cetera, et cetera. So they're sat in the hotel on the New Steen. It's 7th of May, 1986. "Oh, God, here we go," said Grace from behind her newspaper. Murmured George, crunching down on a slice of toast as he watched a couple of seagulls fighting over a crisp packet on the New Steen, the rectangle of grass located between the seafront and St. James's Street, onto which Grace's palace looked. His mind elsewhere, he wasn't quite ready to face the world yet until... "AIDS by the sea," exclaimed Grace, folding back the paper to show George the headline. Rested from his daydream by the mention of the all-too-familiar four-letter acronym, he dragged himself away from the view outside the window and focused on the article staring back at him from across the breakfast table. "Gay plague comes to Brighton," announced George, reading the subhead. "Ugh, go on, let me have it." Turning the newspaper back to face her, Grace did as she was requested. "Forget kiss-me-quick hats, saucy postcards and sticks of rock. Mention Brighton to any day trepper these days, and the words you're most likely to hear are gays, plague and AIDS." Pausing for a moment, Grace lowered the paper. "Gays, plague and AIDS, oh my," she sang to her breakfast companion before continuing. "A magnet for homosexuals since the 1950s, members of the town's large gay community are dropping like coins in a penny arcade machine." Once again, Grace stopped reading and peered over the top of the newspaper. "Oh, very clever. I wonder how long it took them to come up with that one," she said, rolling her eyes before returning to the article. "And get a load of this, a quote from some woman who the reporter says he interviewed, down from the East End with her two toddlers." "Oh, God," sighed George resignedly. "What's she got to say for herself?" "It's really frightening," began Grace in a new voice, which sounded like the tragic heroine from Brighton Rock, that's to say Cockney Sparrow. "Brighton used to be such a lovely place. Now you don't even sit down without worrying you're going to catch something. I mean, I feel sorry for them, but from what I've read, they bought it on themselves. I think I'll go to Southend next time." "Good riddance to a nasty-faced pig. Southend can have her, as far as I'm concerned," huffed George before taking a sip of tea.
That's brilliant.
Funny, but tragic, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, true. Or,
And that, as I say, at the back of the book, because actually in the back of the book there is the timeline of COVID and also that period of the first pandemic. And I do say that is a fictionalised newspaper report, but it is very similar to one that actually exists at the Bishopsgate archive, which has an awful lot of queer ephemera from that period. So it's very typical of the kind of misinformation, the prejudice, and almost like the way that hysteria, you know, we can remember that journalists, it was almost like they were getting some pleasure out of, you know...
Suffering.
It was they were competing with each other to, you know.
Thankfully, we are in very much different times now. It's been lovely. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. It's like having Jack and Ori. It's brilliant. I love being read to. Where can people get copies of the book?
In Brighton, you can get signed copies from Saturday, because it doesn't actually come out until Saturday, from the i360, from City Books, from the Kemp Town Bookshop, from April the 2nd, you can get them from the museum, because actually the museum, one of the key characters, Izzy, is a curator at the museum, so there's a few mentions of it. So it's, you know, there's lots of Brighton places that you'll recognise, even though obviously for most of the book we're locked down, so you're actually not able to go. In fact, there's one lovely chapter where there's three boys, they're in a bubble together, and they've created Kemp Town Village, well, they've created the gay quarter as a board game.
Right.
And they're playing this board game because they can't go out and enjoy it.
Oh, okay.
So yes, you've got it there. And then of course you can go into any bookshop and order it, or you can buy it online.
Right.
Fabulous.
And yes. Will the Sussex Beacon shops be selling it?
Yes, they will. Sorry. Yes. Yes. And all my royalties, all the author royalties for whichever format you buy it, will go to the Sussex Beacon.
Brilliant. So, listeners, if you fancy a good chuckle, we thoroughly recommend it.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on, Darren,
for having me in.
Yeah. Pleasure. Shall we have a song?
This is Darren's choice. It's in the book.
Yes, this book is one of George. George is the 73-year-old drag queen who's the star of the book. And this is one of his favourite songs, and it's mentioned throughout the book.
And it is. Well, that was a good interview, wasn't it?
It was, wasn't it? Lovely guest, and I'm looking forward to reading the book.
Yeah, so we've got, get the book, it's out on Friday, Saturday.
We must say that if you buy the book directly from the Sussex Beacon shops, that the Sussex Beacon gets more money, because obviously if you buy it from a bookshop, obviously they want their percentages too, so best go to the Sussex Beacon shops, where you'll find a lovely bargains in there as well.
Yeah.
I can buy some clothes in there, I think my bed and my spare bedroom, that's from the Sussex Beacon Furniture Shop in London Road.
Yeah, it's very good, isn't it?
Mm, it is.
We're going to have Gary's interview, aren't we, with Tony now, because he's doing this. Tony did a series with Gary from Lunch Positive.
Yes, he
Gary's
did.
Positive. So we played episode one last time, so we're on to episode two.
Without further ado,
shall we listen
here
to
they
it?
Are.
Yes.
Hi guys, and welcome back to the HIV Hour. I'm Tony, one of the presenters, and I'm joined again by the lovely Gary from Lunch Positive. So this week we are going to go into more services. I am running a series on a deep dive into Lunch Positive and everything about them. So this is going to be going on for, I don't know, a fair time, because they're such an ingrained part of the community in Brighton and West Sussex and East Sussex. So, Gary, how are you doing this evening?
I'm great, thanks, Tony. Yeah, great to be with you.
Excellent, excellent. So this week we're going to talk about Lunch Positive starting an older person's living with HIV forum. So do you want to give us an intro about that and what people can expect?
Sure, yeah. So this year we're going to run a series of face-to-face and possibly online forum meetings that gather older people living with HIV together, and because we know, don't we, that our community of people living with HIV is an aging community. Uh-huh. There are more of us over 50 than younger than people over 50.
Yeah.
And people living with HIV as we age, have particular experiences and needs that might differ from other people as they age. And it's really important to have a space where those can be discussed and understood and explored. So that's the reason why we're starting this forum.
Amazing. And I suppose as we age with HIV, I've been 25 years positive. As we age with HIV, different things happen with the medication, don't they? So it's great to have that support for, the older generation.
Absolutely.
Why is the need for activities supporting the older people with HIV?
Well, we know that a lot of services and support that's out there doesn't focus exclusively on HIV, and certainly doesn't focus on aging with HIV. So the purpose of the forum will be to give a space for people to share lived experiences, but also to contribute to discussions and research and learning, and sharing that learning with the wider community, so that people better understand what our lives involve, and also where support is needed. We can explore and articulate that with the people who provide support to make sure that we get appropriate support as we age.
Yeah, 100%. And so what will the forum do to do that, to create that kind of support and group for older people with HIV?
Well, we're going to meet at least five times a year, so every couple of months. As I say, probably face-to-face with some online if there's an interest. Like most things that we do at Lunch Positive, it'll be around a table and over coffee and probably cake.
Love that.
A healthy cake, of course, because because, you know, social spaces to have these kind of discussions work really well for so many people. So the forum will meet regularly. There'll be an agenda for each meeting, two or three points of discussion that will be led by the people who are involved.
Amazing.
So we'll, you know, the forum will decide what it wants to discuss and how it wants to do that.
Okay.
And then we'll have some very lightly guided discussion. Some of that will be recorded and then reflected on at the end of the forum, and then okay. that will be reported. So we'll report that, you know, widely within our community, but also to any decision makers or caregivers or organizations who might want to know more in depth about that topic.
Yeah, amazing. So how is this going to be community led? Are you going to have your same volunteers, but are you going to have the same volunteers that you use on Friday and Tuesday, for example, or are you going to have a specific age range for them? Because I know you have a massive age range for your volunteers task force.
Yeah, we've got a really diverse group of volunteers. I suppose importantly to say for this forum that, you know, we would want it to be peer-led, so it would be only people who are aged 50 and older, and we're hoping for, you know, a wide range of people over 50.
Okay.
Some of the volunteers who are involved on our other services might become involved, but really we're hoping that people who use Lunch Positive support and other people living with HIV who might be new to us and want to come along will just become involved. There'll be a facilitator decided amongst the group itself mm-hmm. to facilitate the forum in a very light touch way. And the whole group will be led by the people that are sitting around the table. And that group might change, you know, each time we meet. That's absolutely fine, you know, mm-hmm. but it will at its core, it will be led by the people living with HIV who are contributing to the actual discussions with some support from myself and anybody else where needed.
Amazing. Amazing. So can you tell the listeners, for those that are aging with HIV, how do people get involved? How do people attend, where they can find the information, etc.?
Great. So most of the information that we have on all of our support, including this new project, is on our website. So people can just look at lunchpositive.org, and or they can do a Facebook search for Lunch Positive, where the information will pop up, and there'll be some posts on there. Get in touch using either of those two routes, and we'll get straight back to them. And again, just to kind of reiterate that, yes, it's for people who we know already, but we're really hoping that more people living with HIV who are new to this kind of support, who want to have a voice around getting older with HIV, will come and join us. You don't have to come to our lunch club or other services to be involved in this. It's much more widely aimed at than that. It's for all people living with HIV in and around Sussex.
Okay, that's amazing. Well, Gary, thanks for joining me for 8 or 9 minutes. I really appreciate that. I'll get people to, we'll tag everything on the radio show and the website, and we'll get that done. Thank you so much for joining me today, Gary.
Thanks, Tony. Really appreciate it.
Welcome back to the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM, DAB Plus and RadioReverb.com. It's the HIV Hour. And, it's a great interview with Gary Pargister. That's the second episode, isn't it, David?
It is, yes.
Yeah, so I think we've got the third episode next time. So thank you, Gary, for doing that. That's brilliant. It's good. It's great service. Just a bit of community news. Well, world news and community news, because... I don't know if you watch Drag Race, David, do you?
I have seen a few episodes, yeah. I like the UK one more than the American one. But it's international, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So I'm a addict.
Is there a name for Drag Race followers, like draggies? Or?
Yeah, there should be, shouldn't
is there?
Yeah. Ruiz.
Ruiz.
I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, so one of the stars that's on the US one, which is on at the moment, Q, he came out as having HIV. So I thought that was an amazing thing, brave thing to do on the show.
Yeah, it's a really high-profile show, isn't it?
Yes, and I think it's good to get that point across and just into the media spectrum, isn't it?
I think they were quite young when...
He's 26, he says. Yeah. So it's always good to get how... How it is for the younger people.
Younger people, yeah. We must get some younger people on the show.
I think so, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But we asked you to tell us, we did have Ellie that was interviewed.
Yes.
The other day, wasn't a couple of episodes ago.
Yeah, so it's really important to get that message across and to try to get to those, you know, inform
It's good
people.
To have conversations about HIV. Even if you're not living with HIV, you should be, you know, if you don't know about it and don't know how it's transmitted, or you don't know about treatment and how the best ways of prevention, I mean, it can be entirely prevented now.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's the HIV Commission goals, isn't it? Or the whole United Nations or UNAIDS goal is to have zero HIV transmissions by 2030.
Yeah, amazing.
And it's
not far off now.
No, it's not. It's not. No. No. Only you've got 5-6 years to go.
Yeah. So you've got a story about the AIDS Memorial in London, haven't you?
Yeah, so as listeners may know, in Brighton and Hove, we have our own AIDS Memorial, which recently celebrated its 10th anniversary a year or two ago. But there's no national HIV and AIDS Memorial. There's a charity been set up called AIDS Memory UK, or AMUK. The spokesperson there is Ash Kotak, who I think we should have on the show, really.
Yeah,
but five artists have been shortlisted for the project, and they've found a site where they want to put the memorial, and the artists have been shortlisted to design London's first permanent HIV and AIDS memorial, which will be unveiled in 2026. The monument will be located near the former site of the Middlesex Hospital, and the listeners may remember that's where Diana, the Princess of Wales, opened the United Kingdom's first AIDS ward in the mid-1980s, and she really broke barriers in insisting on shaking hands with a patient with AIDS, and completely confounded people, and made people realise that you can't catch it by holding hands. It broke down barriers, didn't it? The charity has been partially funded by London Mayor Sadiq Khan, not personally, but obviously from the London Council. And the shortlisted artists are Anya Galicio, the Turner Prize nominee, known for using organic materials such as fruit and plants. Also Ryan Gander, who's a multimedia artist who has worked in sculpture, film, performance and more. Harold Offe, who highlights forgotten historical narratives through performance, video and photography. And Shara Poyan, a ceramicist who draws from his Iranian heritage. And Diana Puntar, who interrogates social systems in her sculptures and immersive installations. All five of those artists live or work in London. And there's quite a variety of artistic talents and mediums and things. I'm fascinated to see what a digital memorial would be, or you know, using multimedia or ceramics or natural materials.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a panel of 11 judges, including the National AIDS Trust Chair Jane Anderson and Theatre Director Neil Bartlett, who we've had on the show
last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, one of my favourite interviews. Artist Rana Begum and AMUK founder, as we mentioned before, Ash Kotak. And they will review each artist's proposal before announcing the winner, which will be revealed later on this summer.
Brilliant.
So exciting stuff. And I think, you know, we should have a national memorial and one for London in particular. It's not a problem, but that London obviously is made up of so many towns and sort of districts that there's no one memorial to people. We're very lucky in Brighton to have it.
And Birmingham had one as well a couple of years ago. They got theirs as well, didn't they?
It affects so many communities.
So I've got a story about PrEP roadmap that the government's set out. And Richard Angel, chief executive of Terence Higgins Trust, they've reacted to the publication of the UK's government's first PrEP roadmap.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I think it's really important. PrEP is so important, isn't it?
Yeah, because I think PrEP has been underserved in certain communities, hasn't it, from what I understand? So I think women are not getting the PrEP, or not coming forward, or not being advised about PrEP, whereas they should be. So there's been some differences or inequalities in the way PrEP has been rolled out. Obviously, there's been a big uptake in the gay community, but other communities need to be made aware of PrEP and to understand that HIV is entirely preventable.
So Richard Angel's saying that looking at the roadmap, so we can and must go further when it comes to PrEP. Mm. According to the sexual health charity, access to the HIV prevention pill is crucial as part of work to end the new HIV cases by 2030, which we were talking about. Richard Angel said that the government's first PrEP roadmap is a welcome step forward, an important acknowledgement of the role PrEP must play in ending new HIV cases, and a can-do attitude to what can be done without current resources and legislative challenges. He says that we can and must go further, which I've just said. The pill taken by people who test negative for HIV to stay negative is a game changer in the battle to end new transmissions. However, not enough people are able to access it currently. The only way to obtain PrEP is through overstretched sexual health clinics, which have had to absorb significant cuts in funding year on year. Surprise, surprise. Mm. More than 60% of people trying to access PrEP are stuck on long waiting lists, really? Raising the possibility of acquiring HIV in the meantime.
Really?
Long delays in appointments for PrEP treatment have driven others to buying PrEP privately online.
That brings back memories of people buying their ARV drugs before they were officially licensed.
Yes, it does, yeah.
So if you remember the Hollywood film with, was it Matthew McConaughey? The Dallas Buyers Club.
Yes, that's a, yeah.
where people in the USA actually bought the drugs from Mexico because they couldn't get them in the USA.
Yeah.
And in fact, people from the UK, I've learned recently, actually went to some of the Spanish islands to buy their antiretrovirals before they were...
So that's what it does, though, isn't it? Just there's no access to it. It's going to drive people underground, and Just finish this article. There are serious inequalities by race, gender, and age. Who is offered PrEP and who is accessing it is often not discussed in the right way and at the right time. We can and must be more ambitious in tackling this. Want to watch?
Good that they're doing the roadmap, and confused when they're saying roadmap, but it means a plan.
A plan forward. Yeah. I think it's like online services and going having an app or community pharmacies would suit them. You know, that's where you get PrEP. Yeah. We talked about it on the show about having it in barbershops.
Yes, tattooists and
machine.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, barbers used to traditionally say, or anything for the weekend, or gentleman barbers anyway, not ladies hairdressers. But, why not have some PrEP as well while you're getting your hair done?
Something for the weekend.
Exactly.
It's not seen,
And remove the stigma about it. You know, sex isn't a dirty word. And if you're going to enjoy it, you might as well enjoy it safely. So I've got some London news here. The Terence Higgins Trust has announced that they're going to have The Auction, which is a very popular event.
They've done it before, I think.
Yes, they have, yeah. And it's going to return in Christie's, the famous auctioneers. And that's going to be in London on Monday, April the 15th. And everybody's invited to take part in that. Since the Sexual Health Charity's flagship event began, the auction has raised over £5 million. Vital funds that make a difference to the lives of people living with and affected by HIV. The THT, the Terence Higgins Trust, say that taking the incredible lots with a glass of vino, and have a look at the Terence Higgins Trust website, and they'll give you more details. And there'll be items that have been donated by celebrities, and one of a kind items. So I'd look out for that. Josh, you have something.
I have, yes. Sorry. We look confused. It's like a madhouse in here today.
It is.
We do it. We have to laugh. Anyway, so I've got Team Beacon. So the half marathon, which was in February. Team Beacon, they've smashed what they've raised from last year. So raised in excess of £70,000.
That's brilliant.
For Brighton-based HIV charities, the Exorcist Beacon. Yeah, so. Yeah. But they had celebrities from Celebrity SAS, Who Dares Wins, running. So this is all good stuff, isn't it? It's all,
Go Team Beacon. And the half marathon is the biggest fundraising event for Celtics Beacon, and it's for the whole of Brighton. And people come from all over the world to run it, don't they? It's a half marathon, a bit more manageable than that. 26 miles of a full marathon.
Well, Gareth Thomas was on it as well.
Oh, really? From Tackle HIV.
And Zoe Lyons,
The famous comedian.
So you know, it's all good stuff. And
it is.
Raising all that money.
Yeah.
Also, just to go back to Terence Higgins Trust, because I don't know if you remember, Dave, but I did start to do this job, this production of the HIV Hour. I got it through the Work Positive programme.
Yes, you did.
Terence Higgins Trust.
Yes, I do.
So they're doing a work and skills program, which starts in May 2024. So that's the return of it, and it's basically all online. Basically now, it's not in person.
Uh-huh.
But if you're interested, I think I'm going to do it again. Actually,
right.
I've put my name down.
So how do you do that then?
So you go onto their website, tht.org.uk.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the works and skills. Section, and there's a what you call it, online form to fill in, and they contact you and go through it.
Right.
And you just have to fill in what you're doing this for. So the working skills program is for people living with HIV. Last year, Terence Higgins Trust helped many people living to build confidence, set goals, identify their skills, or to find them and return to work, training, or volunteering roles through this program. And I'm a testament to that because.
You are.
Well, I'm still here. I'm not on the show.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, you know, quite often many of our guests and listeners will identify with the fact that learning that you're HIV positive becomes is an opportunity as a catalyst for change in your life, or whatever that change may be. So you can use it as a change for good. And then some of the services that THT and other charities offer are really good and supportive in making that change. And in some way, and I have heard this said before, and listeners may think it's an odd thing to say, but HIV sometimes, as some people have said, it's the best thing that happened to them.
Well, I would say that with me. Really. Yeah. Even though it's a struggle sometimes.
I mean, for me, I was in a very destructive phase of my life when I became HIV positive, and it made me sort of face reality and make a change, and it helps me make the changes for good in my life. So
I think for me it's the same thing. It made me look at myself, and I started to do a lot of therapy and hard work, which is quite challenging, I think that was the start of my looking into myself.
So if you have just recently been diagnosed with HIV, you are not alone, and there is plenty of help out there, and don't be dismayed, because you can really turn this around and take it head on and make changes.
But this the working skills program starts in May.
Right, good.
So if you're unemployed and looking to prepare to apply for work, volunteering, or further study, you've been unsuitable or unsustainable work, would like to explore change in the career.
Yeah,
you want to build your confidence through exploring your skills, strengths, and opportunities. Challenge barriers, or you manage long-term health conditions, would like to help to return to work, do go on the website and register. They start in May. It's like online sessions. It's an amazing thing.
I will have a look at the website.
Yeah, so it's tht.org.uk and the Working Skills section.
Well, thank you, Josh. So what a fun-packed show that was. It was great to have Darren, wasn't it? And some good songs and some
Gary
great Pastor stories.
And, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And well done for doing that, because it was like, we had a little
I think the planets are in a funny alignment today, So listeners, thank you very much for listening. We look forward to seeing you on the Thursday of April.
And we're going to have Miss Jason on.
Fantastic. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah. So it's really good she's coming on.
So cheerio.
Cheery bye.
Bye.